Hall & Wilcox acknowledges the traditional custodians of the lands on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to all First Nations people joining us today.
Hi, and welcome to our Smarter Lawcast on business restructuring and being risk ready. In this episode, we're discussing some common tax issues that arise in business restructures. My name is Scott Butler, and I'm a partner in Hall & Wilcox's dispute resolution practice, specialising in restructuring and insolvency. I'm a part of Hall & Wilcox's restructuring and turnaround team, which focuses on assisting underperforming businesses to restructure their business affairs so that they can survive and thrive. Today, I'm joined by Jim Koutsakostas, a partner in our tax practice. Jim has a lot of experience in guiding companies through the tax consequences of restructures. I've worked with Jim on a number of matters where tricky tax issues needed to be resolved. Welcome, Jim.
Thanks, Scott.
Our first podcast of this series was on the liability of directors under the director penalty regime. And so, although that is a tax issue that does need to be considered in business restructures, we're not going to talk about that today. But there are plenty of other tax issues to discuss, and tax issues are always core to any restructure. Jim, I know from experience that if you don't involve tax advice from the beginning in your restructure planning, you can waste a lot of time thinking about courses of action that just don't end up working from a tax perspective, and you may get a nasty surprise later on.
Oh, exactly, Scott. It's really important to get a tax lawyer involved at the start of a restructure, as we'll be able to quickly let you know what the likely tax implications of potential options will be. We may also be able to suggest alternatives that manage the tax consequences and perhaps makes a restructure more tax efficient.
Okay. All right. Well, let's start by talking about some of the more common tax consequences of business restructures. A restructure will often involve the transfer of business assets, either internally in a group of companies or to a third party buyer. So what tax issues arise there?
Yeah, well, the most obvious tax issue on the transfer of assets is transfer duty, or what everyone knows as stamp duty. When we think of stamp duty, we think of the transfer of land, which would typically trigger stamp duty. However, that's not the be all and end all. And there are some issues on a state by state basis that need to be considered. For example, in Queensland and WA, the transfer of certain business assets can be subject to duty. This can include goodwill, business names, and supply rights. IP and goods of the business, like plant and equipment, can also be dutiable if the transaction involves other dutiable property. In Queensland, the transfer of trade debtors can also be subject to duty. Care also needs to be taken in certain states, particularly in Victoria, if certain fit-out or certain items that are fixed to land are transferred, including if they're being transferred separately to the underlying land. And I guess another issue is the assignment of leases. They shouldn't generally be subject to duty unless a premium is payable for the lease or other types of consideration, including non-monetary consideration. Now, a premium, very broadly, consists of amounts other than rent or rent reserved. This has been an issue that has reared its head, particularly in New South Wales, that has seen changes in this area in recent years. The cost of improvements to be made on leased property, borne by the lessee, may be dutiable where those improvements revert to the lessor at the end of the lease. Even a grant of a lease where the lessee pays the lessor's legal fees, which are non-refundable and greater than $1,000, may now be subject to duty.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, stamp duty is just one of those areas that is so tricky, and you definitely need to get tax advice on it. I recall the matter that you and I worked on where the group had done their own restructure 5 years before we got involved and had transferred all their assets to the parent company without considering the stamp duty consequences. And the restructure we were implementing involved retransferring the assets back to the subsidiaries, although it wasn't necessarily to the same ones which had originally transferred the assets to the parent company, and that certainly presented some duty challenges.
Oh, for sure. And look, I won't get into the specifics of that one because we'd probably need a couple of podcasts for that. And I'm not sure anyone is ready for that amount of stamp duty and tax talk. But What the restructure was a good example of is the possibility of obtaining corporate reconstruction relief. This kind of relief is available for dutiable assets that are being transferred between members of the same group. Now, there are a number of conditions that need to be met, and the conditions that apply differ from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. But in a nutshell, where the transfer of an asset that would otherwise be subject to duty is between members of the same corporate group, you know, typically wholly owned or at least 90% owned, depending on the jurisdiction, and no consideration for that transfer is coming in from outside the corporate group other than from banks, then that transfer is subject to no or concessional duty. As I mentioned before, the conditions vary between the states and territories, as does the type of relief. In a number of jurisdictions, the transfer is duty exempt. However, in Victoria and New South Wales, the transfer isn't exempt. Rather, the duty payable is 10% of that which would otherwise be payable. So, if a transfer of dutiable property would ordinarily trigger $10,000 worth of duty, if the transfer satisfies the relevant conditions for a corporate reconstruction, and it's in Victoria or New South Wales, then the duty payable is instead a concessional $1,000. Because the relief is a duty exemption or concession, an application needs to be made to the relevant revenue authority. In the states where an exemption is available, you need to satisfy the state revenue authority that you do actually meet the conditions for the relief. And this typically requires substantial submissions and documentation to demonstrate that the conditions are met. Queensland is one of those states. In other states like Victoria and New South Wales, where duty is still payable but at a lower rate, the conditions are a little less onerous. And so the documentation required to apply for the relief is also somewhat less substantial. Regardless though, it's important to get this right. Don't assume that a transfer of dutiable assets between members of a corporate group won't be subject to duty. It's important that when planning a restructure, the duty relief conditions are considered carefully, and that there's evidence to back up to satisfy the conditions for the relief. Otherwise, you could be up for a substantial duty bill.
Well, you can certainly save yourself a lot of duty if you can satisfy the this corporate reconstruction relief. Is that relief only applicable in the duty scenario?
Yeah, look, there are similar concessions available for income tax purposes and for GST. So the transfer of an asset can be subject to income tax, and that's typically capital gains tax, and can also be subject to GST. However, if the transfer occurs within an income tax consolidated group, then the transfer is ignored for most income tax purposes. Again, similarly, if the transfer occurs within a GST group, then the transfer is also ignored for most GST purposes.
Yes. Actually, speaking of tax consolidation, for either income tax purposes or GST, it's worth remembering that that actually results in all the companies in the group being jointly and severally liable for the income tax or the GST. It's one of those things that they need to sign up to if they want the consolidation benefits. And that really needs to be factored in if you're looking at the place or potentially, you know, placing one of the companies in the group into some sort of insolvency administration. You have to remember that won't necessarily resolve the tax issue because all the other companies will continue to be liable for the income tax or the GST. And I've certainly seen that come back to bite some people before when they hadn't thought about that at the initial planning stage. And I've also seen groups where we found that they're consolidated for income tax purposes but not for GST or vice versa. So you really need to, you know, have a look at that and understand what the impact of consolidation or non-consolidation might have on any group of structure. And talking about GST, Jim, we hear a lot about the GST going concern exemption. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, for sure. And look, it's a concession that should be considered when there's a transfer of a group of assets to a third party. Now, the main reason most clients seek confirmation that a transaction qualifies for the treatment as a GST-free sale of a going concern is so that the purchaser doesn't have to provide additional funds to cover the GST. However, if the enterprise is sold as a going concern, the sale will be GST-free. Now, I'd say that the most important condition to satisfy in these circumstances for this treatment to apply is that the seller supplies all of the things that are necessary for the continued operation of the enterprise by the purchaser. So it's going to be important to work out exactly what the enterprise is. It's important to work out what assets are required to be transferred for the continued operation of that enterprise. And this might include, you know, premises, it might include plant equipment, the goodwill, IP, licenses, supply contracts, any asset effectively that's required to operate that enterprise. Also important is that typically a single purchasing entity and a single selling entity are required for the GST-free treatment to apply. So if important parts of the business are held by different entities and each of those entities sells their respective parts of the business to a purchaser or a number of purchasers, the sale of the business may not qualify for GST-free treatment. And finally, I guess another concept to be mindful of is the term enterprise. An enterprise can be a lot broader than what we think of as being a business. So the act of leasing in itself can be an enterprise. It might not be a business, but it can be an enterprise for GST purposes. So let's say the sale of a commercial building subject to ongoing tenancies may be eligible for GST-free treatment under the sale of going concern rules.
Yeah, thanks for that explanation, Jim. That's interesting. So I recall one of the restructures we worked on, and just sort of moving on and talking about something slightly different, it involved the restructure of a group so that a different entity became the holding company. And so what tax issues were involved in interposing companies and moving shares around in a group?
Yeah, look, and it won't come as a surprise to you, but typically stamp duty is a major issue here. Where a company or a unit trust in most jurisdictions holds substantial land assets, then the transfer of the shares or the units may be taken as if the underlying land has been transferred and then hit with duty at normal rates. This is what we call landholder duty. Now, in most jurisdictions, a certain market value threshold of land held by the entity has to be reached before it's considered a landholder and then potentially subject to duty on a transfer of the interests in that entity. So in New South Wales, Queensland, and WA, the land value threshold is $2 million. In Victoria, it's $1 million, and in Tassie, it's $500,000. Elsewhere, any value of land can make the entity a landholder. If you transfer interests in these entities, then duty is calculated based on the underlying land value and the percentage interests transferred. So, for example, if a company holds $10 million worth of land and 60% of the shares are transferred, then duty is applied on 60% of $10 million, so $6 million. In some jurisdictions where the relevant thresholds are met, certain goods that are held by the entity may also be included in the value that becomes subject to duty, including plant and equipment. This is quite important, as is the definition of land, because definition of land for landholder duty purposes can be quite broad. In some jurisdictions, items that are fixed to land, even if they're not fixtures at common law, may be taken to be land for landholder duty purposes. So, you know, think of things like substantial machinery that might be bolted into a building, plant and equipment, fit out, anything that is somehow attached to the land, that could figure into your calculations for landholder duty.
Yeah, Jim, this concept that plant and machinery and equipment and fit out that's effectively on the land can be part of the land for duty purposes is just something that I think a lot of people just wouldn't know about. I think that's a really important issue.
Exactly. And it does come as a shock to a lot of clients when they might be told that what they think was only a smaller duty exposure has now become larger, particularly if they have substantial machinery on their premises. You know, things like, for example, MRI scanners for a hospital, CAT scanners, things like that may be subject to duty, even if you're not transferring the underlying land. And look, to make it more complicated, You know, the states and territories have different thresholds in terms of the percentage of shares and units that needs to be acquired before landholder duty applies. So, for example, in most jurisdictions, you need the transfer of at least 50% of the shares in a non-listed landholding company before landholder duty applies. And then on top of that, you have Queensland that also has a trust acquisition duty regime. So if you have a non-listed or a non-widely held trust with Queensland dutiable property, and not only land, but any property that is dutiable in Queensland, including business assets, as we mentioned before, like goodwill, supply rights and debtors, then a transfer of those interests may be subject to trust acquisition duty based on the value of the underlying dutiable property and the percentage interests being transferred. Again, it's just really important to get this right, whether in terms of the numbers or making sure that disclosures are made and those disclosures are correctly made to the state revenue authorities. And it could also include applying for corporate reconstruction or corporate consolidation duty relief if the transaction is eligible for it. Now, look, if disclosures aren't made and the revenue authority finds out, you may be subject to substantial penalties and interest. And finally, there may also be income tax issues in interposing a new holding company, particularly from a CGT perspective, but also if there's a new head company of an existing income tax consolidated group. It's just important to make sure that any rollovers or other relief, so for example, demerger relief, are carefully considered and applied. And if relevant, the tax console provisions are also carefully considered in order to manage any income tax exposures from this kind of restructure.
Jim, I'm actually glad that you mentioned the landholder duty provisions, as complex as they are, because it's a good segue into discussing how that impacted a transaction that you and I were involved in recently, acting for the buyer of a well-known Australian food brand. The company in that matter was being acquired from voluntary administration via a share transfer under a deed of company arrangement, and the shares were being transferred for nothing, given that the company was insolvent and therefore the shares were worthless. But we still had a stamp duty issue because of the plant and equipment being acquired, which was mainly large food manufacturing equipment in a factory, and that was valued over $2 million. And so the landholder duty provisions in the New South Wales Duty Act applied. So that's a very good example of when this landholder duty provisions can apply and be a bit painful. Well, thanks, Jim, for all your insights today. I guess the takeaway from today's episode is that any business restructure is likely to have tax consequences, and you need to involve a tax lawyer early in the planning process so that you can fully understand the tax consequences of what is being discussed and proposed. There are likely to be more than one way to get to the outcome which you want, and one of those is going to be more tax efficient than the others. So you might as well understand what that is and see whether you can save some tax. Thanks everyone for listening today. As always, please get in touch with us if you have any questions. You can find our details on our website, which is hallandwilcox.com.au, or connect with us on LinkedIn. And if you enjoyed today's episode, then rate, review, or follow our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.
This podcast is not legal advice and should not be relied upon as such. You should always obtain legal advice about your specific circumstances.